He actually said that he will kill himself if the Department of Immigration will send him back home. He said, no, they will take my dead body back home.
He told me something's going to happen today, and that was why I was there. I tried to talk him down, but the only way I could talk him down was I told him, give the letter to security.
How does that happen? How is it that, at least as far as we can tell, a man in immigration detention stands on a roof threatening to commit suicide, and the task of trying to talk him out of it falls to his cousin, a man who's almost certainly not qualified to deal with that sort of crisis? We pay a private company to run these centres. We pay police to deal with these sorts of crises. Where were they? How is a man who'd given authorities plenty of warning that he was suicidal, how is it that he can be left essentially unattended? How is it that the system can ignore the warnings of a person threatening suicide? How is it that after all the controversy of the past decade, with detainees engaging in self-harm and suffering all sorts of psychological problems, that the system keeps producing these kinds of results? How is it that the system can be so unprepared for this sort of crisis? Let's be clear about this. This case is in some ways an unusual one, a more complicated one than most. Josefa Rauluni, the man who committed suicide in immigration detention yesterday, had only been in detention for a month. He didn't come as a refugee. He was working as a fruit packer. He overstayed his visa. He started to fear for his life because he became a pro-democracy Fijian activist in Australia, not in Fiji. But the story raises plenty of urgent questions. If this can happen to a man after a month, what about those who've been in there a lot longer? Right now, though, I'm pleased to be joined by Yusaya Wongatarua, who's the national president of the Australian Fiji Democracy and Freedom Movement, who spoke to the man in the middle of this, Josefa Rauluni, who committed suicide yesterday and was dealing with him up until he committed suicide. Yusaya, thank you very much for being there this morning. Tell us about Josefa Rauluni's state of mind in the lead up to this.
I took seriously his threat of committing suicide.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the things that was lacking from the other people gauging from the exchange and conversation that I had with them yesterday.
How long had those warnings been in place, and what form did they take?
He rang me up on Sunday night from Villawood Prison, and he said to me that he's got a letter on that day saying that he's going to be deported early the next morning, which was yesterday. He said, I have written a response back, and I would like you to read it. So he started reading it to me, and he was appealing that all he wanted to stay in Australia until democracy is restored in Fiji and the military government is removed, because he feared persecution if he goes back.
Did Josefa Rauluni, in the time that you spoke to him before he committed suicide, did he talk to you at all about conditions in Villawood Detention Centre? And if so, what did he say?
No, he did not. But he was talking to me right up until just before he jumped.
And what was he saying?
He's saying that he's going to jump if they try and grab him.
Was anything happening? You were speaking to him right at that moment. Was there anybody around? Was he being left essentially to his own devices at that point?
No, he's on the balcony or whatever. And he's saying to me, they're trying to grab me. I'd rather die here than be sent back to Fiji. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. Do you think I should do it? And I said, don't do that. Don't be silly. You know. And I said, look, is there someone in charge that I could speak to? And he said, that person just stepped out. Oh, hang on. He's back here. Oh, she's back here. It was a lady. And I said to the lady, listen, I've just been speaking to Josefa last night. He has a potential to be a major witness in a fraud case that I'm trying to nail for the police. And I said, I'm going to try and ring immigration, the police. I promised I was going to do that to him first thing yesterday morning. And I said, can you just back off while I try and do that? And she said, no, we have to do our job. We have to detain him and take him. And I said, well, the guy is threatening to jump. And the lady said, well, we got a job to do. And then I was really agitated. I said, look, if he jumps, it's going to be your head on the chopping block. And she hung up on me. I was coming back from school when the phone rang again, and this time he's saying, all I could hear was him pleading with the people. He was sort of crying and saying, don't you understand, I don't want to go back to Fiji, I'd rather die. Hand me the phone to one of the guys. So he handed the phone to one of the men. I said to the man, the guy is threatening to jump, don't you understand, can you back off, give me about 5 minutes. And the guy said, you'd go ahead and call immigration, I've got a job to do, and hang up on me again.